Welcome to the Healthcare IT Today interview series. We feel lucky to be able to talk to so many smart, passionate, and knowledgeable people in healthcare. Now, we're taking our favorite interviews and sharing them with you. So sit back, relax, and enjoy perspectives on the world of health IT.
Hello, and welcome to Healthcare IT Today, where we explore the latest in healthcare technology trends and discover valuable insights in health IT. I'm Colin Hung, and joining me today is my friend Ken Chekai, problem solver and CISSP at NetScout. Ken, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Colin. Appreciate you having me back again. This is awesome.
Now, Ken, since the last time you and I spoke, you have added that designation. You've achieved that certification, the CISSP. Can you explain what that is?
I did. I call it a little nerd cert in my family because nobody knows what did I do anyway. But CISSP is a Certified Information System Security Professional certification from the ISC organization.
Well, that's actually pretty appropriate because given what you and I are going to talk about today, I think that's going to be directly up that certification.
Yeah, I think it'll probably help. I really do. All that studying had to come into play somewhere.
Well, Ken, so what I want to talk to you about today is well, right now we're sort of emerging from the pandemic, right? We're starting to see people start to come back to healthcare, but there's still this giant backlog of patients in terms of like surgeries that we're trying to work our way through. And there's still this group of patients out there who are still a little bit, you know, nervous coming back to the healthcare system, or they've maybe just gone without care for so long. They're kind of like, maybe I don't need it. And so healthcare is really trying to work very hard to bring people back in. And my operating theory is when you're trying to bring people back in and in some cases regain their trust, the last thing you want is your systems not to be available or not to be up. Because if I'm going to try and book something online and I can't do that, or if the doctor is saying that they can't access the medical record because of some system issue, then you're just basically eroding all the trust that you're trying to build up with your patients.
So true. No, it's patient experience is everything.
So you and I were talking before, Ken, and you corrected me on something because I was saying that uptime is what we really want. Like you wanted to have a good uptime on your systems, and you're like, no, Colin, that's not actually what you want. Can you maybe explain to the audience what you meant by that correction?
No, that's a good point. Well, again, especially coming from a network background, people think from an IT perspective, uptime, well, is the device up? Is the server up? Is the application up? And again, up is good. That's certainly a good metric, but really the one that's more, I think, more conducive towards measuring for patients would be availability. And the example that I would use is because especially in today's world where you've got multi-tier applications, you've got hybrid cloud applications working in your data center with databases, with patient care, the idea of availability is actually more important because, again, I can ping a router, a switch, a server. And is it up? I pinged it? Did it come back to me? It did. That's fantastic. That's great. Is it working, though? And by that, think of as your infrastructure pieces, router, switches, servers. Those are more important. It's a good measurement for uptime. But availability, think of the applications that ride on that infrastructure. What I need to know is not only, number one, are they up? That's like the first metric, which is great. But the second and probably more important, it's a little harder to figure out sometimes, is availability. And the reason for that is I need to know that when a patient logs into the website, I need to know that not only that web server is up, I need to know that it's available and answering the calls. We've all got on our browser, type in a URL and get a 404 error and go, oh my goodness, the URL is not available. But in that case, the server was actually up, but the URL is unavailable. So availability, the applications, the database, the middleware, the medical devices, that all plays into it. Availability is what we find. It's probably the more difficult to track because it's one thing because typically a simple ping is, okay, ping the router, ping the switch, ping the server. It's up, it's working, it's great. Or an agent that says, hey, I'm answering, we're good. But to know that it's not working well, when it's the performance is degraded, that is where it gets a little bit gray. That's where we spend most of our time.
And Ken, how do you measure availability? Like, is that done through special tooling? Is that done through special software? How's that done?
I think everybody uses a little bit different. I mean, obviously everybody can leverage an SLA. Sometimes, especially if you've got third-party vendors, they'll have specific SLAs on specific things like response time from point A to point B, not only at just a layer two, but just, getting through the actual network and the wire, but then also responses back from the server and the application. Where we typically get involved on our side of availability is measuring between the web server, the application server, the database server, and the network all kind of together. Oh, even today now, even with the cloud as well. And again, it's not just what we would call layer two latency, which is, you know, from point A to point B, just raw, how long does it take to get a packet from here to there? That's the first part of it. But again, on the availability side, it's okay. Not only did I know how long that packet took, and that's great. It's kind of nerdy, but it is a good measurement. But what I really need to know is that web server is talking to the application server and the database server, and no one is spitting out errors. Because if they're spitting out errors, they're not doing what they're designed to do. That affects the caregiver, but like you're bringing up, that actually can affect the patient experience even more. We've actually had issues with that. We help customers with challenges like that.
And what sort of things can really impact availability? You've done a lot of work in healthcare. Are there some common things that kind of really impact the availability of certain systems?
There can be. Again, it's going to depend a little bit about each customer environment, the type of gear they use, you know, Windows versus Linux, different router platforms, vendor platforms. But basically, again, uptime from a network perspective is going to be more of a ping, more of a, is this device up and that type of thing. But once you get into the layer on top of the actual infrastructure, that's actually the patient facing application. And that can be a big environment. It could be a storage array. It could be a bunch of virtualized servers. It could be in the cloud. There's lots of different variables that takes in. And that's why I believe it's so much harder to get to that availability metric and how to measure it. Is when it's out of bounds, because I want to know when I'm spinning so many errors on the patient care is logging into a website. If it's actually spinning errors about it, I want to know about that right away. But different platforms, different way software is written. I mean, there's just different ways that is measured. And from my experience, there's some certain continuities between health systems and applications, but they're all just a little bit different from each different environment.
In I'm not a cybersecurity expert or anything like that, but in my mind, it seems to me that one factor would be just not patching and not updating the systems that you're using frequently enough, and therefore having outdated systems and compatibilities can lead to some of these errors that you're maybe talking about. Would that be a true statement?
Absolutely, could be a true statement. I mean, patching and vulnerabilities is a big deal, and you know the adversaries, the bad guys, they change their tactics every day. That's part of their job, and they're good at it. So the cybersecurity teams, a lot of the healthcare organizations, really have some big challenges there because it's a never ending battle. It's always going to be like this. It's you think you can never just relax and get a cup of coffee. It's always running. Vulnerability is certainly a piece to it. Change control process, testing patches ahead of that. We've seen things where, again, you think of the raw infrastructure and how things work, and that's fine. It's up, it's available, everybody's happy. But then you'll see things that are maybe a little underlying the architecture. Something is something like IPAM systems. So DHCP and DNS, if they don't work well, or they've been misconfigured, or, you know, we'll get nerdy here, but if on a DHCP server, if a scope, you know, you're on a hospital floor leveraging, you know, special badges that get on the network via IP, mm-hmm. and they can't get an IP address. Well, whose fault is that? Well, it's not really fault. The bottom line is I want to know when it's not working, where I'm going to have a technical issue so I don't affect the patient care. Sometimes those are misconfigurations. We've seen cyber issues that sometimes they appear as attack, but actually they were actually just a misconfiguration or a change in this configuration setting that maybe shouldn't have been. But again, we want to get to, okay, the first question is when we get to that type of situation, whether it be war room or anything to deal with patient care, is this network, is this application cyber? And then we start peeling the onion down and start diving into the actual layers of it. But there are so many things that can affect availability. I don't think I could talk about them in one interview.
Well, you brought it up and I think I won't say it's the bear in the room because it's a pretty big bear and we're all aware of it. And that is, of course, you've called it the bad actors, right? Are you seeing an increase? Are you seeing any trends in ransomware in healthcare?
We are seeing lots of trends and lots of increases in this one. So specifically, a lot of times when you're going to launch a ransomware attack as an adversary, you're going to do a look over here while I go over here. So a lot of times we'll see a multi-vector attack. We'll see a denial of service of some form. And a lot of times we think of that as, you know, just, hey, I'm shooting you a whole bunch of traffic that I compromised a bunch of, you know, PCs and robots and IoT devices across the world. And I'm just going to turn around and amplify and shoot you traffic and try to knock you over. Well, while your cyber team is dealing with that, then of course, what I'm going to do, I would never do this, that what the adversaries would do is then they're going to go a diversion attack and then try and, you know, penetrate the perimeter of the systems. And then they're going to start, you know, typically they'll do some recon, do some scanning, pull back. Then they're going to look at what they have available to them and go, okay, now that I see that I've got vulnerable system, especially old medical devices can be really bad targets that have old operating systems. Once I discern that, now what's my plan of attack? Okay, I'm going to launch a denial of service over here. And while that's going on, now I'm going to penetrate the perimeter, find this operating system, compromise it. That's certainly one way to do it. But we are seeing a giant uptick, not only in healthcare, frankly, at our company. We see it because of what we do for a living. We see it in government. We see it utility. We see it enterprise customers. But healthcare, that's just a very, very sad thing for people to go after healthcare organizations for ransomware, knowing full well that there's patients' lives in the background of that. It's a very sad thing to me. Always will be.
Now, I mean, you know, healthcare has been criticized for being, a little bit behind, let's say, on the cybersecurity arc or maturity level. But I'm encouraged by you saying that that's actually, healthcare is not the only vulnerable industry here. There's lots of others that are being attacked.
It really is. We're seeing it across the board, across industries, because of part of our company does is denial of service mitigation. We have a very unique kind of view into the threats on those types of things, but we are seeing it across the board. It's crazy how much is going on right now.
And you were explaining to me before we got on air here that there's like a new form of attack. You called it an extortion attack. Can you explain to me what that is?
Yeah, and so it's very similar to a ransomware attack. So a ransomware attack, just by definition, typically, Colin's a hospital. I come into you, Colin, and I pretty much, I get into your systems. And I encrypt. As soon as I encrypt things, I basically lock it. I have the key to that. You don't. You can't access your files, your systems. And now you pay me or you're just going to melt. You know, your hospital's not going to do anything. You'll be able to access your systems. What we've been seeing over the last year and a half, even I would say, is what we call an extortion attack, where it's an offshoot of it. Still same type of adversaries. But what I do now is I go ahead and I've already penetrated the perimeters of your system, and I can either get to your files. I can get to a database. I'm going to get some of your data, and I can do I can go in that attack, pull the data back and then post it somewhere so that I show you, hey, Colin, you've been compromised and so you need to pay me. So it's more of an extortion. And then the other thing they'll do is also launch a denial of service attack at you saying, hey, Colin, by the way, we're going to attack you tomorrow at 4:00. Here it comes. And at 4:00, sure enough, here comes a denial of service attack. You need to pay us. That's more of an extortion attack. Once you get into those, again, you typically get into, you know, three-letter organizations that are going to get involved here because they're pretty serious, and well, they have a tremendous impact on healthcare among other industries.
So I think ransomware is being written up a lot, and cybersecurity obviously written up a lot. The going theory obviously is that you have to take a layered approach, right? There's no silver bullet that's going to protect you or a silver shield that's going to protect you from all attacks, or there's one thing you can do. So what are some of the newer layers or more interesting technologies that you can put into this layered security?
Oh, great question. So the whole concept of that, I mean, you said it very eloquently, it's called defense in depth. It's a fundamental. And that basically the whole concept is there is no one tool that's going to protect you. And that's just common sense now. So the more tools, the more controls, the harder you make it for an adversary to get through, obviously the better. What we're doing at NetScout is really focusing on how we can complement existing cybersecurity controls and other platforms and really integrate with them. Because of the notion of what we're up against and what cyber teams are up against, because we've got a unique view, again, a little nerdy here, but we've got a unique view of the application and network traffic that we can see it as it comes in. We can see inside of encryption in some cases with the right deployment. We can see inside the cloud, and what we're doing with that data typically would use it for what we'd call service triage, which would be, you know, a fancy name for troubleshooting. But service triage, you know, healthcare organizations understand the word triage. When you get into a cybersecurity type incident and you're looking at controls and those types of things and defense in depth, as you mentioned, you're looking at where can I add more value? Where can I add more things that I can put tough hurdles and controls up for these adversaries. Because we see traffic, we can actually really complement not only some of the threat feeds that we pull into our solution, but we can also, we've got the conversations. So again, it's a little nerdy, but I see source A IP address talking to source or destination IP address. I've got, not only do we actually have that traffic and we record that into our database, which is huge for trying to determine your attack surface, but also when you've been compromised, we have the packets. So we actually have, you know, the bits and bytes that are recorded that we can see, oh, not only did they come in through this particular avenue, here's the tactic they use. You know, there's a lot of, again, other frameworks that people are tying into like MITRE and things like that. But also once they've compromised the perimeter, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to lateral movement. Where can I get to next? And that is very, very difficult to track. We do that. That's part of what we do. And what we've done is we effectively, there's a thing in the world called an IOC, an indicator of compromise. You mentioned vulnerabilities, mm-hmm. Tons of great tools out there, tons of great threat feeds out there. What we do now is we take our smart metadata that's got all this conversation and protocol as well as packets information. We're taking those indicators of compromise and pulling that into our system. So I can quickly look at a dashboard, not only geographically to say, let's see, I'm in Ohio. Why is my organization talking to North Korea today? Which is really a bad thing. And we can quickly, very quickly, just drill right into that and go, okay, I see exactly who it is. I see what it is. Now I can put proper blocks and countermeasures up into my tool sets. Again, complementary is the way to go. Integration with these other solutions is the way to go. But that really, when you're trying to promote a defense in depth strategy, which everybody is, having these types of solutions where we can see application and IOC and vulnerabilities really is a way to evaluate your controls, but also let's see, how did they get in? So it's really attack reconstruction in some cases, but I can go back in time. So when I have a 0 day event, like we had Log4j, which was a real popular one a couple of months ago. Well, the threat feeds, it was a 0 day. They didn't have that. They didn't have the information about what does this look like? What are the threat feeds? So what we can do now is take that threat feed and then play it into our solution and actually go look at data that we've already collected to see that, oh yeah, we did see that. And again, it's really great from a attack surface monitoring, which is really what we're kind of focused on, but it's really about complementing the other solutions that are out there for most of these organizations.
So it sounds like, you know, lay terms for me, like the tools and the capability that NetScout has is almost like, I call it contact tracing, right? Like you're able to kind of go back and say, oh, this is how they got in. So now next time I can now put in these controls and these barriers to close off that avenue, right? Whereas before it might've been hidden from you, might not have seen that was a vulnerability.
That's 100% accurate. I take the word contact tracing a little lightly because coming off the pandemic, some customers are like, please don't say that again, but we'll know what it means. But in the cybersecurity world specifically, that's lateral movement. That's more conducive term really in the cyber world. And that's really difficult to track across systems because you got to remember once an adversary gets in, let's say they get in via something silly, we'll call it remote desktop protocol or telnet or something silly like that. But once they're in, now they're going to see what else move. They're like, ooh, what can I get to now? And now they're going to change protocols and go this way over here. And those are very difficult to track. It's almost like, okay, I come in, I'm speaking English when I get in, and then I'm going to speak Spanish, and then I'm going to speak Portuguese, and I'm going to speak French, and you're all over the place. It's very difficult to track that, but you make a great point. We call it contact tracing at NetScout, but lateral movement is really what that, you know, depending on viewpoints of pandemic, that's really the view that we're really attacking and bringing value to.
So again, I asked you this last time we were together, but is there anything I can do? I mean, if I was a CIO listening to this and kind of going, man, you know, yeah, I got a whole cybersecurity team. They're all, you know, they're giving me the budgets and I just have to sign the check and they're buying stuff. But is there anything I can really do to really kick my security up a notch, given all this stuff that's going on right now as a CIO of a hospital?
That's a great question. And it's a very difficult thing to go after right now. But the one thing that I know that can be done, there are a lot of great tools and solutions out there. And obviously, you know, there's endpoint, there's next generation firewalls, there's load balancers, there's all the IDS, IPS, there's all types of solutions here for detection and protection from intrusions. What I want to do as a CIO, I want my teams, number one, I want my teams to work together. Number two, I want to use every bit of value of all the tool sets, all the solutions that I have at my disposal. I want value from them. I don't want vendor speak. I want value from them. And they're, to me, that's where you're really serious about it versus, hey, I went to a vendor thing and I heard something. What I want to do is I want to leverage the tool sets and actually have an architecture that, that can promote defense in depth. And I want these things to work together. I want APIs. So I would be, if it were me, and you know, I'm not really a CISO or a CIO yet, but you never know. If I were going to do that, I would really, I know it's funny, good stuff. I know that people aren't going to hire you, big guy. What I would probably do is try to pull those things together. Because again, if I've got application integration and there's lots of APIs out there for these solutions, if I can make them work together towards the purpose of trying to keep everything up and available, which is the beginning of our discussion, I want to do that. And I want to be able, and I want to have an architecture for it. So I want to leverage every piece of value out of those solutions. That's what we preach to our customers. Preach is probably a bad word, but that's what we believe. Because we think, because we've got such a unique view into the networks and applications, while yes, I can help you troubleshoot your things, I can also help you under cybersecurity things. Let's work more together. There's been, I'll say in the past years, in some organizations, not every, there have been challenges with the network teams, application teams, and cybersecurity teams really working together, really closely working together. Sometimes it's been a bit of a, you know, this is my territory, this is yours. I'm going to throw you under the bus. You're throwing me under the bus. That really has to stop, because as an organization, when you say a ransomware incident for a hospital, is there anything that's going to be more business or patient impacting than that? I can't think of any. And at that point, if I'm the CIO, do I really care if it's a server issue, a cyber issue, or a network issue? Nope. Just fix it is the bottom line. And so if I've got tools and solutions that can really work together and actually really deliver value and tangible value, that's what I'm going to focus my time on.
I like how you tied all that together so nicely, Ken. You saved me from having to do the summary. You're right. We started talking about availability and the importance of that from a patient standpoint, and especially from healthcare right now, trying to rebuild trust with patients. And then we got to talking about ransomware and the impact that can have on availability. And now what you're saying back is, hey, we all got to work together, because at the end, it's not about network. It's not about availability. It's not about the cyber threat. It is about taking care of our patients. And when you don't have access to your systems, you can't take care of patients, no matter what the cause of that lack of access is.
Yeah, that is a very, very strong point. And that's a scary thing about today's, I mean, not only the applications and networks and even the cyber platform so complex, because there's so much to look at, so much wide space. So having visibility to all that, it's really, really a challenge, because, you know, it's very different, you know, just like, it's very hard to see what I can't fix, what I can't see. It's very difficult. And that plays for networks, applications, and cybersecurity. And that's what we're trying to attack at NetScout right now.
So Ken, before we end, where can people go to find out more information about NetScout?
I appreciate you asking. So obviously we've got quite a bit of material at www.netscout.com. In there, we talked about denial of service. There actually is something called Threat Horizon, where you can actually see live what denial of service attacks are flying across the globe. It's absolutely nuts to watch. And you're like, is this real? But you can see actually by industry. It's a free resource and highly recommend anybody in cybersecurity really take a look at that. It's really cool. Also on our webpage, we've also got something we call Arbor Networks is part of NetScout as well. So they're the denial of service experts, and they're part of our team now, which is fantastic. But they've got some threat reports that they deliver that are also free twice a year that are freely available that I'd highly recommend somebody take a look at as well.
Well, Ken, as always, you've shared so much amazing information here. It's going to take me a little while to unpack all of it, but thank you so much for sharing it. And thank you so much for your time.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, if you enjoyed this interview as much as I did, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give us a review on iTunes, YouTube, or wherever you're listening and watching this. Also, head on over to healthcareittoday.com, where you can access free resources, industry news, and insightful articles. You can also connect with us on Twitter using the hashtag HITSM. I'm Colin Hung. Thanks for being here.